We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The country 5 days ago, at the very least, more and more attention has been focused this week on social injustice, inequality. You can't solve a problem until you identify it. We've had some prominent people say some dumb things, but they have almost immediately backed off those statements. And I think some of them may have doubled down on those statements not long ago. And I've heard people like Mark Spears, Ronnell Brooks Moon, Barack Obama talk about hopefulness over the last few days, hopefulness that shines through the pain. And that makes, not that it matters necessarily how I feel, but it makes me more hopeful than I was when this week began. How about you guys?
I'm not, but I know that this is going to take a very long time, and we have yet to see the full measure of the reaction from the other side. I mean, we've seen what the cops do, but you know, this is the very early start of a very long and very ugly process, and a lot of people are going to get chewed up by it. So, optimism? No, I think it's way too early for optimism. Take what you can, but for me, I think there's a lot of walking to do.
I don't think what Ray just said precludes optimism. I mean, it's an extremely long road, and yes, it's going to be. I mean, you know, it's going to be difficult for different people in different ways, obviously, but there's a lot of work to do. I think you're absolutely right, though, Whitey, when you say that identifying the fact that there is a lot of work to do is the beginning of that process. And while there might be an awful long road to walk, you know, that's a road hopefully we're closer to being at least on now. And so I don't think optimism is misplaced as long as it comes with the acknowledgement that there's a lot of hard work to be done.
Yeah, and as I said, I take my cue on that from the likes of Mark Spears, and he was on SportsCenter Tuesday, I think, and he was talking about optimism. When I first heard that word, I thought, what? How can you be optimistic at this time? Then I realized if he is, and last night on The Butcher Shop, we had, as I mentioned, Ronnell Brooks Moon was on, and she says she's in a really hard time, but she says she's still optimistic, and So I think there is room for some optimism. It certainly beats the alternative. But to Ray's point, obviously, that we have such a long ways to go. Can I ask you guys what you think you'll remember the most about this week? There's a couple of things for me. One is a quote, and I think you actually touched on this yesterday, Matt. This is a quote from Kiara Butler. She is the CEO and founder of Diversity Talks. And my wife pointed this out to me, and she wrote, "Not being a racist is not enough. We need to be actively anti-racist." And I know I'll always remember that. I'll also remember my wife in tears this week, looking at a photo of a young African-American girl holding up a sign that read, "Please don't kill my daddy." And my wife was in tears, and what's wrong? And she showed me this picture. And then I'll also always remember, I don't know if you guys played it yesterday. You probably heard it, Nate Burleson's comments yesterday on Good Morning Football regarding his grandfather and what Drew Brees had said. That was incredible. So those are three things I know I will never forget. Of course, there's so many things, and who knows, you know, what the weekend is going to hold. But those things are always going to stand out in my mind. I know that.
I'm going to remember both messages like that, but I'm also going to remember the level of ugliness from the other side. And again, I've been through this before. I thought after the riots in 68 that maybe we'd see some permanent progress here. And 52 years later, we're back in the same place and maybe a little bit worse because the racism is more open and virulent than it was then. So this is just life experience for me, but that's why I'm not optimistic. I've seen this dance before, and I think because the ask is so much higher this time from the people who have been victims, the response will be equally difficult. So that's why, you know, and again, anybody who wants to choose to be optimistic, that's fine. I've seen too much to be there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't quite know how to keep responding to that. It's a fair thing to say. I get it. You know, I really don't think we're in a worse place than 1968. I think we see a lot more than we saw in 1968 by virtue of the lines of communication in 2020. I mean, I think that's what has changed more than anything. I think generally, you know, on obvious human issues like this, there tends to be a gradual, slow progress over time. Certainly the last 4 years have not been ideal. But I don't think there's any question there's a positive trend towards human rights of all kind, civil rights of all kind, over the last 50 some odd years. That being said, it doesn't excuse the lack of more significant progress, and it doesn't promise significant progress to come. You know, I mean, there is a lot to do, but hopefully we will do it.
Yeah, and I heard you guys make this point yesterday with shelter in place. People are obviously being forced to deal with some of this in a way that we didn't have to before. So, Ray, I understand your point, and I respect your, you know, broader perspective on all of this going back to the 60s. But I still like to think that we are, in some ways, at least slightly better off, just if for no other reason than I think there's more awareness what that will amount to, what we will do with that. Obviously, that's the key. But
I mean, that's the thing. Like, can I tie on to that quickly? Think about the point that Whitey made at the start of this, that one thing he'll always remember is his wife in tears looking at a photograph that she saw of a young black girl with a particular sign. And that is something that Whitey has just explained to us impacted his life. And Whitey is a white guy, shocker, who, where do you live, Whitey?
Currently in Sacramento, but my wife, by the way, is not. She's Asian, but be that as it may, just before you
but
get
I'm just,
further down that path. Yeah.
I'm making the point, it's nothing about that. It's just that you're a white guy living in Sacramento, and this protest could have been, you know, let's for the sake of argument say it was in Chicago, right?
Right, right.
You wouldn't have seen that photo in 1968. And we're here talking about how seeing that photo is part of your understanding of the pain that this community is going through. And it's helping you to understand on some level, although, you know, none of us white folks are really going to be able to understand, but it's helping you empathize, certainly, with a community that you might not otherwise see. And so I think for all the disadvantages of social media and the constant media coverage of everything, and for all the upsetting images that we see, there are inspiring images, there are life-changing images, and frankly, none of us would have seen George Floyd, and none of this would be happening.
Right.
If not
right.
for all of those instruments of communication. So, you know, I think that's the fact that you, and this isn't about you, Whitey. I mean, I know you to be a good and decent person who didn't need convincing on this issue, I'm sure. But the fact that white guy X in Sacramento can see those images does give me hope that maybe he will be impacted.
I appreciate that. That used to be my radio name, White Guy X in Sacramento, actually. It's, you know.
Now, was that when you were just a caller? Because I feel like as a host, that's a tough one.
Well, I used to host horror movies on TV, and that actually would have been a great name, White Guy X in Sacramento.
What was your horror hosting name?
Well, I was just, it was my regular name, but I was known as the Creepmeister Maximus, actually. So,
Maximus. Are you a big horror guy?
Yeah, well, more of the older, more classic stuff, to be honest with you, than some of the newer, more violent films, frankly. You know, the stuff that, we grew up on, the black and white, Universal stuff, you know, which is ancient now, I know, but to me that had more atmosphere, although I'm sure at the time people thought, this is horrible. What is this? This is shocking. So I get it. Anyway, thank you, Matt, and thank you, Ray, and thank you for listening today. Coming up here, as we all start to get back on the road again, now is the perfect time to think about taking a California motorcyclist safety course. The course allows you to skip the riding skills test at the DMV and is required for riders under 21. Become a better rider. Learn more at CaliforniaMotorcyclist.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Well, what do you think of this funky NBA play-in plan for the final two playoff spots? Let us know in the text line here. By the way, we have officially shifted our text line number to match up with our call-in number, 888-957-9570. Just one number now to join the conversation. So add 95.7 The Game to your contacts now. We want to hear from you. Whitey in for Damon today. Damon Ratajkowski, 95.7 The Game. Arash Markazi. Yes, sir.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt the promotion of Arash Markazi joining us in 12 minutes, which is very exciting.
Right.
Before we got too far away from it, I wanted to talk quickly about the music, because I was having a discussion with the young men in the studio just before we came on air about music in general. And how, you know, if I was in control today, I would probably play different music than them. And they proved my point by playing what, to my ear, and I don't recognize exactly what this is, but to my ear, it sounds like a very poor man's version of a Bone Thugs and Harmony song. So all I would like is for us to play the Bone Thugs and Harmony song coming back from the next break. Is that enough? Is that doable, guys?
Producer Nash on the mic, are you saying that's not a Bone Thugs and Harmony song?
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that was Crossroads.
Sounds like
maybe their most popular song.
Oh, well,
song.
Why don't you just play the actual song? Why is it like a weird...
Is this your first day in radio? We can't play songs with actual lyrics on the way back.
You can play the chorus? Sure you can.
Well, we try to play instrumentals, but I think what you're getting at is we get these off YouTube. We got to give credit where we get it.
I don't think that's a real instrumental.
Yeah,
I really
agree. It's probably a remake. It's probably a poorly made remake. But again, it's in our system. It's what we use. We're going to take what we can get out here.
Good enough for you to know what
all right.
it was.
I'll forgive you that, because I was confused. That I don't think that's the real instrumental. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe just without the lyrics, it sounds that weird. Because, you know,
Kolsky,
if you think about Bone Thugs and Harmony,
the
voices are sort of instruments of their own, are they not? Thank you very much. I'll be here all week.
Yeah. I think we're all glad you interrupted me for that. I thought that went very well. That was sensational.
Also,
are you still with us, Ray?
Kolsky, you have your own segment at 5:30 to talk about music.
I shame on me. You guys are doing everything you can. How dare I?
By the way, you know, it was, I guess, John Wooden who said, it's amazing how much you can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit. And I say, screw that. And the reason I say that is because I think I should get some sort of creator's credit for Kolsky's Corner, because I remember I was in a meeting with you guys months ago, and we're sitting around and somebody said something like, oh, give it to Kolsky over there in Kolsky's Corner. And I said, that's a great feature. Now, that's all I said. You've done all the work, but I think that actually happened. Did it not? Wow.
Okay. I have no memory of that, but Whitey, let me tell you, anyone who knows me can tell you that doesn't mean a thing. To my memory, that was just one of 3 to 5 names I threw out at the group when we were coming up with the segment, because I enjoy alliteration. That being said, it may have been in my head because you said it to me. I can't.
You're welcome.
I can't say you're wrong.
You're welcome.
You know what?
I won't bring that up again. Yeah.
No. I'm going to give you 1% of all profits from Kolsky's Corner. I look forward to that.
Thank you.
Because I want to maintain a relationship that has trust in it between the two of us.
Yeah. Ray Ratto, what do you think? Okay. Thank you, Ray. Ray, what do you think of the NBA's plan now?
About our discussion.
No. I want you guys to flourish in this conversation. I just have no place in it.
Okay.
Right.
What?
Well, we move on. The NBA players have officially, of course, ratified the NBA's plan. 22 teams, Florida. I have to admit I'm excited. Can they pull it off? How closely will this resemble NBA basketball? What was your first? I know we've heard about this plan. This isn't the first we've heard about it. But, Ray, what do you think? How optimistic are you that they can pull this off and even finish a season, for that matter?
I don't think it's up to them to pull it off. It's up to the virus to allow them to. I don't think the basketball will be nearly as good, and anybody who expects it to is crazy because it's an entirely artificial world for all of them. And I think it's going to take a long time for them to adjust to empty gyms, playing at playoff intensity, trying to make those work, trying to play without worrying about what you say because of hot mics and no background noise. But beyond that, I mean, they set up a format that everybody agreed to, which is, that's a triumph because we're seeing, how that's not working in baseball. And we're seeing, the potential for a massive level of damage if you don't. They at least understand, and so does the NHL, that you're kind of in this together, so don't pick fights where you don't have to, but it also helps that NBA players don't get paid in the playoffs. They'll get paid for winning a round because that's part of the incentive, but their salaries basically end at the end of April and as it does the NHL. So in that way, they didn't have much to argue about. So the only thing that's left to do is for the league to be wise and prudent about how it deals with outbreaks. Because I think that's the real test. It's not the format, and it's not even the level of basketball that gets played. They'll do the best they can if they're allowed to play.
And we'll take what we get.
I would like to think so, but I'd be willing to bet you that there will be plenty of complaining.
Sure, but we complain.
I mean,
anyway.
That's the grease that keeps the motor running in this country. But what I'm really more interested in than that is to see what they do when whatever version of the second wave hits them. What they do about that? That's what I want to. That's the most important thing to me, because I don't have a rooting interest for any team. I never do. And I don't expect a lot in terms of quality of play. It's an entirely new experience. But the most important thing is, what do they do when they hit their first real health-based speed bump?
Yeah, I think that's right. The big test is how they handle health. But again, and we've gone through this, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on that because they seem to have handled things about as well as they could have so far. Now, the bubble, I don't understand exactly how it works, but I don't need to understand exactly how it works today. They need to understand exactly how it works in a month and a half. So, I think that sounds doable, just like I think the timeline for the season sounds reasonably doable. I do think they're going to have to answer the question of how a positive test or five affect the league. I hope they won't get to a point where shutting down seems like the best option, And that's just, we're just going to have to see how that goes.
This from Woj, NBPA leadership stressed to players that it is mandatory to stay on the Disney World campus in Orlando during play. There won't be tracking devices on players, but goal is to keep everyone in a safe environment. Actually, that's from Shams. Woj says the NBA player leadership informed of a plan to keep 1,600 people in Orlando bubble at any given time. Player families will be allowed to arrive after first round of the playoffs, likely three members at a time. Am I a simpleton for caring more? This is vitally important, but I find myself caring more about the basketball as a distraction than the particulars of the bubble.
Well, I mean, again, I don't think you have to care about the bubble. We just have to trust that the NBA has the bubble under control and is being responsible, right? I mean, do you trust the NBA or not? That's what this is going to come down to, because you're never going to totally know everything about it. And I don't know that they can believe without tracking that they'll be able to keep everyone there. The question is, can they get everyone behaving responsibly enough to avoid an outbreak? And I guess we'll see.
Yeah, Portland, San Antonio, Phoenix, New Orleans, Sacramento, also with a chance here to snatch that eighth spot from the Grizzlies. The Kings haven't been to the postseason in 13 years. The Suns, here come the Suns, haven't been there in 10, but isn't this plan, as far as allowing other teams a shot, isn't that all about trying to get Zion into the playoffs?
I think that is one of many things that drove that. I think a huge part of it is wanting to get as many teams their local TV contracts as possible. Because eight games is not a random number for them to play. It's just enough games that every single team involved will qualify for their local TV contract, so they don't have to pay that money back. And that's huge, right? And I don't know how they're going to make good on the other eight teams, but for those 22, that's a big deal. So I think that's a huge part of it. I think experimenting with a play-in for the last seed is an appealing thing for them in general. I think fairness is a thing that, all things being equal, they're not opposed to, right? So giving teams that were within reasonable striking distance a chance, I think, is part of the incentive. But undoubtedly, at some level, having the opportunity to have your most marketable rookie in the playoffs is a great benefit of this plan.
It does, however, throw into the air the one thing that we know about NBA fans in time immemorial. They can smell a conspiracy starting to ignite 50 miles away. And if there is a controversial call that benefits the Pelicans at any point during the play-in stuff, they'll be screaming about that.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's one of the reasons why the Zion matter, and I hate to use it because it's not really his fault. He just is what he is. But, you know, the NBA has always had this sort of ongoing war with conspiracy freaks, and this is just going to open that up more. You know, and there's not really much you can do about it, but the fact that they didn't go to 16 teams, that they went to 22. I mean, I'm not sure if the money was the only thing that they were after, that they wouldn't have had 29 of the 30 teams go in and the Warriors stay out, because the Warriors can't get to 70. They're the only team that would gain nothing by playing. Everybody else would gain something, because I know, dropping the name today because I'm an idiot. Oh, Amin El-Hassan said that there were only two teams that couldn't get to 70, and the other team was the Lakers. And even at that, you know, the Lakers have infinitely other things to play for. And to me, you know, the Zion component is big, because I think they want to have as many eyeballs as possible, because I don't think it's going to be a captive audience necessarily. I don't know how many people in the Bay Area will watch, because I think there are a lot more pure Warriors and nothing else fans than there are NBA fans. I think the novelty will wear off fast, but if you're one of those people who likes the idea of, you know, seeing the next LeBron or however they're going to bill him, this is a system by which they might get that. But even at that, they've got to close four games in eight games, and that you know, that's not going to be easy, especially for a team that is essentially as erratic as New Orleans.
They actually have to do that, though, because of the play-in tournament.
Yeah,
they just have to pass the Blazers and stay exactly the same distance behind the Grizzlies that they are, and then win two games in a row.
Yeah, that thing's goofy. We'll get into that. If only I knew somebody who was in Vegas, because I think you got to put money on the Sixers, right? They're healthy. They have no more road games. They're terrible on the road. They essentially have no more road games. And it turns out we do, because we do know someone in Vegas, or someone who was just in Vegas, nice enough to join us from the LA Times, one of the first to visit the reopened Las Vegas yesterday. And yeah, he's still there. Arash Markazi with us on 95.7 The Game. How weird is it to be in Vegas when there's no one else there, Arash?
It's a little weird. I'm expecting more people to join me this weekend, but it is weird. I mean, the weirdest thing is, like, I get to Vegas at 9 a.m. and I go to the hotel and they're like, we don't open till 10, which is a weird thing to hear from a hotel in general, but even more weird in Las Vegas where they never close. So, yeah, here yesterday, this is day two of the reopening of Las Vegas. More people are beginning to show up, but it's, you know, it won't be the Vegas we remember for quite a while, probably.
How tentative were people yesterday and how less tentative today? And I'm talking both about incoming guests and hotel staff.
So the entire staff, if you're an employee at a hotel, you have to wear a mask. The people showing up yesterday were very, I don't want to say tentative, because they actually came to Vegas. Obviously, they, you know, had come to grips with any, you know, problems that they had. There were more masks yesterday than today. Not only are there not as many masks, there is a lot of people at the pool right now. The pools are open. Not the pool parties that maybe you've seen before, but definitely a packed pool. It's 100 degrees right now in Vegas. So the pools are happening. Drinks at the pool are happening. As we get into the weekend, I think people will be less tentative, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not sure. But not as cautious, I will say, today as they were yesterday.
In general, what are the things that – I mean, you mentioned hotel employees and masks, but pools are open, you said. Like, what precautions are being taken more broadly, not necessarily by individual guests, but more broadly to – keep people safe?
You know, the pool is the only place that I've been to so far in Vegas that kind of feels like it did before, in the sense that no one's really wearing a mask, no one's really social distancing. Now, you go to the casino floor, there's plexiglass in between players. So there's one in front of the dealer, there's one in between individual players. The bars have plexiglass between every two stools. You can't just go up to the bar. You have to kind of check in with someone. They do count the number of people who are on the casino floor. So, you know, there will be a situation probably either this weekend or next weekend where you can't go into a casino because it's too full. So it's different, but the pool is sort of like, from what I just noticed, like, not much of a difference, because obviously no one's wearing a mask. People are drinking. People are jumping into the pool.
Arash Markazi, nice enough to join us from the LA Times, visiting Vegas, one of the first to visit, pardon me, the reopened Vegas. So what are people like there? Is everyone just keeping to themselves, or is there more of a sort of a conspiratorial nod and a wink, like, hey, yeah, we're the first people back here? How are people acting towards each other here in this strange situation?
I think everyone's really just happy to be back. I know the employees are all very happy to be back. I mean, this is a town that really depends on tourism. And so obviously when no one's flying, no one's driving, and it's completely shut down. I mean, it shut down March 17th, and it opened up June 4th. And so I know most people are just happy to be back, whether you're someone who loved Vegas and just are back for the first time, or obviously an employee. And so I think there's sort of a celebratory mood right now. We'll see how it progresses. But it is interesting, you know, because I think a lot of people were tentative, but they really, as far as whatever precautions you can take, like I go to the MGM, there is a washing station like every few feet. There's hand sanitizers, there's masks, there's gloves. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I quite frankly can't find at home just because it's not available at the store, they have it on the casino floor.
Yeah, who'd have guessed that?
Exactly right.
How have the sports books been, given that there's so little to bet on? Are there a lot of people there betting obscure sports? Are they betting more sort of NFL, NBA futures? What's the action, and how is it forming in the books?
So the futures are really the most popular thing. The NBA coming back was a big moment for a lot of the sports books because it was sort of like, okay, now we can kind of put odds on these 22 teams that will be going to Florida. That was a big moment for them. College football, obviously, there's this sense that that's going to happen. Pro football as well. So the futures are really important. They've had to refund a lot of the previous futures in terms of win-loss totals and things like that, but they're hoping to recoup that with the sports coming back. And I was talking to a few people who work at the sports book, and they're thinking August, which is normally a quiet month for them, could be one of the more hectic months if all the sports that we think are going to come back will come back. If you got playoff basketball, playoff hockey, baseball possibly, preseason football, I mean, that month could be huge for them.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just going to ask, did I see on your Twitter account you went to a show last night?
So they had a supper club at the Bellagio, and that was fun, you know, because a lot of, like, there are no shows currently happening. So any, like, Cirque shows or anything that you normally would go to on the Strip, those are all closed. So the closest thing to that was a supper club, which I normally wouldn't have gone, but, like, the story I'm trying to do is trying to kind of get a sense of what Vegas is like. So today I went to the gym. Tonight I'm going to get a haircut. You know, these are not things that you would normally, you know, brag about before, but I haven't done any of this stuff since March. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
How long are you planning to stay to chronicle how quickly Vegas gets back up to whatever speed it's going to get back up to, or are you going to have to leave on Sunday?
No, so I'm here for a week. But part of the story is the return of sports, again, spectatorless sports. But Saturday we have UFC 250 in Las Vegas. Top-ranked boxing has their first card here in since March on June 9th, and then they have a second card June 11th. So I'm leaving on the night of June 11th. So I'm here for a week. But part of it is sort of like sports coming back to Vegas, sports books coming back to Vegas. Vegas still trying to become a sports hub in terms of hockey, you know, so we'll see if that happens. They are cautiously optimistic that will happen.
Arash, we appreciate your time. Before we let you go, let me ask you about something that we're going to be talking about coming up here. Would you place any wagers on baseball? Do you think we're going to have any baseball this year?
I think we will have baseball just because, I mean, I'm maybe giving them too much credit, but it looks like every sport besides baseball is going to come back. So if baseball's the only one, I mean, forget about 94. I mean, this is going to be way worse for them than that. I wouldn't place a bet on anything right now. Just you don't know what's going to happen. But I do think some form or fashion, baseball has to come back.
Arash Markazi, thank you very much for your time. Have fun in Vegas, if such a thing is possible right now. We appreciate it, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Yeah, Matt, the Sixers, I think, would be the team I'd be looking long at hard at here as far as NBA futures. What do you think?
I think that's a decent idea, but, I hate to be the chalk bettor, but if I was going to put money down now, in a way that I was different from how I, because at the beginning of the year I said Lakers, and I think I believe that most of the season. I'm not sure I ever changed my position, but if I thought quarantine bubble situation gave someone an advantage, it'd be the Clippers.
Ray, yeah, I know you're an inveterate gambler, so am I wrong here to think, hey, there are some opportunities here, although they're hard to identify which ones are worth exploring, because everything we think about the NBA right now, there's a lot of it that may not apply when they actually start playing again.
I mean, you could take a flyer on nearly anything, but for the most part, the NBA has always rewarded chalk. And secondly, the only team that really benefits from this, and Matt already alluded to it, is the Clippers, because they could play the Lakers on seven neutral courts as opposed to seven road games, to the extent that that matters. But I think the 76ers aren't good enough to get out of that because they don't have the best players. I mean, the best team is still clearly Milwaukee, and it's not really complicated. I think there might be some individual game bets once you start seeing lines come up where you could play it. But I think if you're trying to play the long game, you play one of the two LA teams and you play Milwaukee because I don't believe anybody else is there.
Coming up, we are going to have baseball this year, right? Kolsky and I are going to lock horns on that, and that'll be brought to you by Fremont Bank, still open to serve the community they love with full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Will we have baseball this year? I say yes. Whitey in for Damon. Whitey, Damon, and Kolsky. Excuse me, Whitey, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Why do I say we will have baseball? Because I sure hope we're going to have baseball. People smarter than I, people smarter than me, people like Matt Kolsky disagree. By the way, I'm not even sure how many people right now care whether baseball comes back. Ray, can I get... I laughed because I was going to ask you about...
people, right? I mean, 888-957-9570. Let us know. Call and text, same number.
Ray, I know it's dangerous to ask you about your level of optimism, but do you have any level of optimism that we'll have baseball this year?
I'm trying to decide if there should be baseball this year because I think the owners are asking to be kicked in the face for doing what they're doing here. And I think the only way that it will hit them is if they end up getting nothing out of this year and having to spend the next 5 years trying to relocate the audience that they so blithely dismissed. In terms of optimism, I think at some point everybody will agree that this was an insane idea for the owners to try to make sure they got paid while everybody else paid them. And I think ultimately they'll cave, but it will just mean that the next CBA will be incredibly uglier and far more protracted. But I think they'll take the short money rather than walk away from it because that is their instinct.
I would think so. And Matt, let me lay out my case here. Admittedly, it's a little shaky because it's based on emotion, but then, you know, take your Louisville slugger to it as you will. One, there will be baseball because I hope there is, emotional argument. that's cute. Secondly, I just, and Ray touched on it, I do think there's too much at stake in terms of MLB's relevance and popularity for players and owners to whiff on this chance to seize center stage. The game, and, you know, I always think it's useful and instructive to make sure we separate the game of baseball from the business of MLB. But MLB needs a boost. Popularity is waning. The damage caused by not having a season could end up costing the owners a lot more than they'll lose by compromising in the negotiation. If you check out, as you guys, I'm sure you have, check out Jeff Passan's breakdown at ESPN.com. It suggests that two sides are further apart philosophically than they are financially. So things look bleak now in part, I think, because each side wants things to look bleak to the other side. Fans that still care, are the dwindling few of us, we're caught in the middle. And I just think the amount of money that can be made or made up during a postseason might be too much for the owners to pass on here.
Okay. Everything you said, I essentially agree with until the last thing that you said, which was that owners, it might be too much for owners to pass on. And I'm going to bring up something that Ray loves to talk about, which is that it seems the owners, first of all, make as much money no matter how many games are played, but also that despite declining popularity, their experience has been, everyone talks about declining popularity on the outside and on the inside, we keep making money. And as long as that's their attitude, I totally agree with you, Whitey, that not playing, especially with other leagues trying to play, given the situation and having it be a fight over money would be the worst thing you could do to baseball's long-term popularity. I don't know that the owners care. I haven't seen any proof that they care. And even though you're right that the gap is more philosophical than financial at this point, it's a large philosophical gap over a small financial issue, right? And that, to me, in a time like this, is a little frightening. And even if it's just posing, I could absolutely see them posing themselves out of a timeline wherein they can reasonably have baseball. Because if you think about it, how late can you play baseball? Especially if you're playing at home parks. I mean, what's the limit? November? You can't play baseball in December in what, 60% of the parks in your league?
We have dome stadiums. I mean, they could. I understand what you're saying,
but not if they want to do their home park plan, right? That's all. That's what I'm pointing out.
Yeah, right.
So the timeline is already slipping away from them. Is the point that I'm making, and they're still bickering over the financial issue.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to.
This is from
Stephanie Dazio of AP from Sacramento. California is going to allow reopening of schools, day camps, bars, gyms, and some sports with modifications starting next week.
Wow.
That's all I've seen on the story. I'm sure there'll be more as time goes on. But
I do not think the Bay Area will be on that timeline.
I wouldn't think so, but, that's out there.
Also, what does that mean, reopening schools in June? Aren't schools out?
Not all. Summer schools. They might hold classes for, kids who didn't finish their year. There are a lot of possibilities there.
The other thing with opening campuses, sorry, Ray, is all the things that would go on a school campus during the summer, if the school is closed, you can't do anything. So you can't hold camps. You can't play sports on those fields. There's a lot.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway, there's that. As for the baseball thing, there was a story in 538 earlier this week that basically penciled out what the owners would make in an 82-game season and a 50-game season without revenue sharing, an 82-game season with revenue sharing. And in either event, they would still make roughly the same $1.2 billion in profit they made last year with a full schedule paying everybody. So I think, and this is unique in labor management relations in baseball, I think people are so revolted by the way everybody's sort of viewed this that there's more of a pox on both their houses view of the business of the sport in general, which means that owners are catching a lot more grief than A, they usually do, and B, they thought they would. So that might play into a willingness to sort of settle for short-term losses in hopes of getting long-term gains at the next CBA. But for the most part, I think what's happened here is that the idea that owners love baseball has finally been revealed as the provable lie that it's always been. They love the fact that they can make money whether they try or not.
Has it always been a lie, or did there used to be owners in previous generations of ownership that did love baseball?
Well, I think there were. I mean, Ray can speak to this. There were owners that there was a time when some owners made their money through their baseball team. That was how they made their money. So they had to care about the game. And that, of course, those days are long gone. Right, Ray?
Yeah, there's to the best of my knowledge, there is no longer a team in baseball that relies on the baseball team as its sole support. They're all investors. They're all, they're
all
companies.
But in a way,
companies.
Ray, isn't that like saying Michael Jordan didn't rely on basketball for his income? Because that's certainly true. Michael Jordan made a ton on endorsements and what have you. But if he hadn't played basketball, he doesn't get those endorsements. So isn't that true of a lot of those sideline businesses of baseball?
No, because none of those people are owned by a former player. The only real parallel for Michael Jordan, quite frankly, is Mario Lemieux, who owns the Pittsburgh Penguins.
No, that's not what
Ron
I mean.
What do you mean?
That's not what I mean. I was using an analogy to say, like, we could have said about Michael Jordan during his playing career, right, that the vast majority of his income was off the floor. But if he's not playing, he's not going to get those endorsements. So no, but is it not analogous to baseball that, yes, they make a lot of money adjacent to the game, but if they're not playing the game and it loses all popularity, don't they also lose a lot of that sideline money?
Ray, but before you answer, sir, I apologize. I must say this. Welcome to your 3 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Whitey in for Damon today. Ray Ratto, Whitey, and Matt Kolsky were figuring out whether there is going to be baseball. I say there's going to be baseball this year. I say that partly because I just hope there will be. Kolsky is not so optimistic. And Ray, I'm not sure here. You're saying all we know is that the owners don't love baseball, but that we already should have known that, right?
Yeah, I mean, and getting back to Matt's point, the difference is that Gordon is unique in that he made his fortune such as it is. I think he's worth $2.2 billion now as a result of basketball. He doesn't have anything in his portfolio that doesn't directly relate to his playing career. That is not true of most teams. I mean, the Atlanta Braves are owned by something called Liberty Media, which means you have to dig around to find out that the owner of the team is a guy named John Malone, is worth about $7 billion. But the Braves were bought by a company that already had billions. Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers for $2 billion, even though he already had $50 billion from his Microsoft money. So for the most part, in almost every situation, the people who own sports teams now either bought them with money from another industry that they'd already made their billions in, or they inherited the team through either being a child of or wife of an owner who passed. So that's the difference. And
why owners probably don't love and respect the game as much, you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, what they understand is that the sports team generates profit.
Right.
But if the sports team started to generate losses, they'd look to dump it. The beauty of the sports pyramid in America is there are so many ways to make money and so few ways to lose it that the only way you can actually damage your team is if either you refuse to play or the economy tanks. And weirdly enough, right now, we've got both of those things, which is why the owners in baseball are being as pigheaded about playing and enduring a bit of a loss because they're not used to that. They don't believe in enduring a loss. That's the difference.
They're so incredibly, the industry is so incredibly tone deaf. Was it Tom Ricketts, the Cubs chairman, who said, people think we have piles of money. We don't generate all that money. It's so stupid and so ham-handed. And I think Rob Manfred has been terrible because he's the commissioner during a crucial period for the game when Major League Baseball needs to make sure that it stays relevant and becomes more relevant to an increasingly younger potential audience. And
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.